Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. We also welcome our radio internet audiences and we welcome everyone to visit us at online at www.commonwealthclub.org. My name is Patrick O'Reilly. I'm the chair of the Commonwealth Club Psychology Forum, and I'm absolutely delighted to introduce today's speaker, Ms. Tiffany Woods. She is a wife, mother of three, trans woman, longtime Barriott LGBTQI advocate, community organizers, and is recognized local, state, and national as a local, state, and national leader. As current program manager for transgender services at Tri-City Health, in Fremont, she ensures that trans community has access to affirming, responsive health care, HIV prevention and care, and the program she co-created in 2002, Transvision, is nationally and internationally recognized as a primary health and HIV program for transgender, gender non-conforming people in Alameda County. She made political history in 2016, being selected as an at-large delegate for Hillary Clinton at the Democratic National Convention, one of the first three trans delegates to ever attend the National Democratic Convention. She is a graduating member of Emerge California Class of 2017, and she was recognized by Representative Ro Khanna with a Congressional Citation of Honor. So please recognize, please welcome Ms. Tiffany Wood. She's a co-worker of mine. She's a great person.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. Give it up for Patrick. That was a whole lot you have to get through. So thank you for that wonderful introduction that I wrote myself. Okay. I'm honored to be here at the Commonwealth Club. This is really cool. I tell you, this has been a long time coming. When we started this program, the work in Tri-City Health Center in Fremont for our trans program in 2002, we started with 15 hours a week and $20,000. I was making more money casting movies in Hollywood, and my wife was like, you should go get that job because we're never moving to Hollywood. I'm like, okay, we'll go do this. 15 years later, I think we're saving lives, we're giving hope, and we've touched a lot of people along the way. So, what I'm going to do, Trump, transgender, when Patrick came to me and he said, I hate Trump and I want to do something and I hate what he's doing in the trans community. And I'm like, we can talk.
Yeah. I might have used different words.
Okay, maybe different words, but I said I hate Trump in my office and the door was closed and nobody was recording us. So what we want to do is really talk about what's going on with transgender rights in the era of Trump. And so we're going to do two-fold part. For trans people, we get this all the time. We get the barrage, right? Almost every day you open up whatever social media platform, news platform, and there's something he's doing. It may not be full headlines like the trans veterans ban, but he's doing something. What are we doing about it? Well, of course, we have ACLU and Transgender Law Center and National Center of Transgender. There's tons of national advocacy organizations fighting this at every cause. But we don't realize the scope of it until you actually just look at it. And let me tell you, after me putting together this presentation for the last couple weeks, I think I need my own therapist in mental health just to like, whoa. Because it's really breathtaking of the targeting of people. And it's almost surgical precision. So we're going to walk you through. And part of the way I wanted to design this was you actually are going to get a taste of what we get. how it is affecting us mentally. And then when we get through that, we're going to breathe. And then we're going to see what we're doing at the local of Tri-City and what we've been operating in a conservative environment for a very long time. And in 2005, I was getting death threats. So this is nothing new for us to operate. We got really a little bit more visible when Obama administration in 2014 and the Affordable Care Act. And now we know how to kind of work these waters and navigate it. That doesn't make it any better, but it's something that we have expertise in. So I'm going to go ahead and start this because there's a lot of content, and I'm going to run through these slides rather quickly to get through them all, and then we'll have a Q&A, and I'm more than willing to answer all the questions. So I want to open on a positive note. The World Health Organization. Note, this did not happen in America. This happened on the world stage. And if you didn't see this on June 19th, this is a game changer worldwide. It's going to take a while in America for this to take an effect. But the World Health Organization said that gender congruence is not a mental disorder. Acknowledge that classifying it as such can cause enormous stigma for people who are transgender. Well, this is what we've been saying for a long time. We're not crazy and we're not a mental health disorder. And apparently the World Health, finally in 2018, have agreed with us. So this is a big deal. So I'm going to open with this. As you can see, being transgender is not a mental illness. Not a mental illness, okay? No longer considers gender incongruence. Not everybody has it, but it's there. A condition experienced by some trans people. United Nations Health Agency announced on Monday the condition is gender dysphoria, has been reclassified as a sexual health condition. And the bigger implication right now is that this announcement won't immediately impact any of the cases or healthcare in the United States, but has the potential to create deep and meaningful long-term changes to how transgender people are treated by the law and healthcare companies. So while we're regressing and losing our civil rights in America, there are some really great stuff happening around other countries and on the world stage. And so it helps us to focus on that and to hold on to those and point to those as we're fighting our regression. And I was actually in Guatemala last July doing some international work with CDC International. And they were like, they're mad at us for losing all these rights that they've been fighting, modeling their rights and fighting, like, just they're doing this in America. And why can't we do this? And they're getting name changes and the government's paying for hormones. And we're like, so they're kind of like getting mad at us when we go there. And they're like, look, I had nothing to do with it. So what's happening here is affecting them as they're fighting there and using us as a model the last few years. And now it's really affecting how they're doing things, because if we're losing our rights here in America, what's going to happen there? How much hope do they have to fight what they've been fighting for? So it does matter what's happening here. And then here we go. I think we can all take a, we're going to go back to a few years ago. And this is what was going on with all the crisis lines. Trans Lifeline is actually here in San Francisco. They had a record amount of calls that day. A record amount of calls. So are these calls valid? Are these stressors valid? Trump's win causing a surge in demand of mental health. This was all the way around in many different categories, not just trans. Mental health. These are actually headlines pulled. Crisis and suicide prevention headlines. Record number of calls. Trans Americans fear for safety after Trump win. We're traumatized. So this is the mental health 2 years ago. These are words out of the trans community's mouth. National trends, anxiety, stress, and fear. More discrimination, more harassment, more violence than ever, and many of the quotes that I was reading from trans people being interviewed around the country. Fear that we're going to lose our gains, especially access to trans-related health care. Hormones is HRT, gender-affirming surgeries, mental health treatment. All covered under the Affordable Care Act starting in 2014. Before that, they had never been covered. It was a game changer. People were actually improving their quality of life. They were accessing the surgeries. They were accessing mental health. They were finally being able to do the things they always wanted to do transition-wise. We're afraid that we're going to lose it. ID documents, federal guidelines changing. What a lot of people don't realize is that quietly, between 2010 and 2012, Secretary Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, quietly ushered in changes in federal guidelines for changing passport. You no longer had to have proof of medical transition through surgical procedures. That's huge, because not everybody wants surgery. Not everybody can afford surgery. It doesn't always work in everybody's life. So all you had to do was the medical documentation, but not surgical papers. Didn't get a lot of fanfare because they didn't want the conservatives and the right wings to grab hold of that during a coming up political year. And that's been the federal guidelines now. So you don't have to have those surgery. If we're afraid. We're starting to see some changes in that unofficially. And then transition surgery, ID docs, timelines. Everybody's been moving up. And we felt it locally in Tri-City Health Center in Fremont. We'll get to our programs later at the end. Our clients are stressed out and moving up all their timelines. I wasn't going to do the surgery, but I'm going to get it now. And we're like, no, you should get it now. Let's get all your referrals in now before things happen. Because it would take about a year for everything we figured out from 17 from inauguration, it would take at least a full year for things to really start moving. So we've been pushing everybody to get their referrals in, get their medical appointment, get everything lined up, and get what you can get done while it's covered. And there's your headlines right there. Race to finish paperwork, including minors that are being, this is a these two twins, one's trans. They're trying to get ID documents together. I'm using this one. Now we're starting to see some of that happen. Some of these are isolated cases. This just broke. Some of these are isolated cases. I will actually tell you, to get my passport for Guatemala, I had not ever had a passport because I wasn't traveling. So we do this for a living, so I know exactly what to do. We had the medical doctor of transition. We had name change court, which I changed mine in 2004. Birth certificate, sent it all off, paid the extra $100, expedite it. Got delayed. Now, this is before everything's really starting happening. Came back. They wanted my 2004 notarized and signed court document. They wanted it updated to 2018. Like, what? Go to the Hayward Courthouse. She said, well, are you kidding me? She said, this is a perfectly legal document. She had no idea why they wanted a new one. Had to pay an extra $50 for them to just basically print it out again and stamp it in 218. It cost me an extra $50. Caused a huge delay. Why? Nobody knows. So it does seem like they're making things harder on purpose, and they're scrutinizing their documents more. We're getting a lot more calls from DMV and feds going over all our medical doctors' numbers, their PA numbers, and really they're looking them up and they're making sure they're valid more than they ever did before. And they should be doing their due diligence, but it seems like we're getting more and more clients calling and saying, no, they're not accepting this. No, you got to change this. No, you got to add this word. So we're expecting more issues coming down the line. Hate crimes. Were these concerns valid? Well, hate crimes are up. Spike. This is hate crimes, all hate crimes. 897 reports recorded in 10 days, according to The Independent. 10 days. That was 10 days since election. Okay. Hate crimes, San Francisco just broke July 18. We're up in San Francisco and California, according to the latest statistic. In the red is LGBT and trans-related. Incidents motivated by sexual orientation, bias, real or perceived, increased by 18.8% in California, more than race-motivated hate incidents, which rose by 16%. Anti-trans and anti-gender nonconforming, a 7% increase. This is also following national trends. All of this is in red. Hate violence. Well, we know that it's always up around the LGBT community. These are the latest stats as of 18. They don't have 18 stats. They won't have them for another year. But for 17, in the first year that Trump was in office, this is where we're at. 86% increase in hate violence, homicides in the U.S. last year. 2017 was a devilish year for the LGBT community. So it's not just fears and rhetoric. We're actually now seeing it in real time happening. And this is a coalition of 40 community-based anti-violence groups based in New York that compile this every year. It's a great database that most LGBT organizations, they're the go-to source because they have more up-to-date data than the FBI hate crime statistics because a lot of people don't report to law enforcement. The other thing that wasn't in my introduction, I'm the LGBT key liaison for the Oakland Police Department. So I've been working with them since 2012, since we had a murder in Oakland, and I'll tell you about that later on. So, and then when I talk to them, nothing has broken yet in Oakland worthy of hate crime and violence, but we're always vigilant on it. Trans murders, are they going up? Yep. 25 and 16, 28 and 27, which was the highest and the deadliest year, and we're at 16th right now. So it has a potential to top last year's totals. These are the latest trans murders. It's important. Are they targeted because they're trans and the Trump? Hard to say. No matter what we do, we're tracking them, but the fact is that they're happening and they're increasing. And most are young trans women of color. So, this is where it gets really real. From the moment that Trump was sworn in, we've been erased from the White House. This is both trans and LGBTQ. Erased from the White House, Department of State, Department of Labor websites, and he's been targeting us ever since. Legislating and erasing LGBT Americans, specifically targeting transgender Americans, out of existence at the worst and second-class citizens at the least at the federal and state level. If we can't navigate society safely from point A to point B, we can't leave the house. If I can't go to the bathroom somewhere between point A and point B, I'm not going out. And this is what we think is happening from all the reports all over the country on the ground and organizations that are actually interviewing witnesses and stuff. This is literally a targeting and trying to erase, specifically starting with trans people and then following with LGBT. According to GLAAD, Gay and Lesbian Association for the media organization GLAAD, Trump's first year in office, there were over 120 anti-LGBTQ bills introduced in over 30 states. They've been waiting for this moment. They've been planning this. So let's look at all the areas that they're targeting us. Education. So the big news with the beginning of his administration, the transgender guidelines were completely removed. The Obama, historic Obama guidelines on trans students. They were historic, life-saving. They removed them. The guidance presented best practices from schools across the country and advised schools on complying with case law under the Title IX sex discrimination law. They announced it will summarily dismiss complaints from trans students. So I highlighted the trans stuff in red just so that you, there's a lot of content up there. You can really see it. So they didn't waste no time with this, right? Inauguration is January 20th. This is February, and we're already attacking trans students, okay? Dismissing complaints. Big news, here's the Obama guidelines that literally happened in October of the year before. Trans students must be permitted to use bathrooms that align with their gender identity. Emphasize students' gender identity will be considered that student's sex when it comes to enforcing federal law. Locker rooms, bathrooms, all gone now. The swipe of the pen. Sessions in DeVos. Schools now have no guidance for the federal government to ensure equal opportunity and protection for hundreds of thousands of trans students who are the most vulnerable. Youth and trans students are the most vulnerable of the trans community. We know that. Those of us on the ground, I know that some people here are working with trans students, some may have in their family, they are the most vulnerable. So imagine what these headlines have done to them, right? Because they're literally seeing these headlines. And when I've talked to our clients at Tri-City, they're like, yeah, you know, we see the tweets, we see the headlines, we see, you know, on our Facebook or our Instagram. So when you see that in such an you know, just a kind of a battering ram at you on your screens, it affects your mental health. So everybody is stressed out. And then there's HB2. So I'm going to walk you through really cool through HB2 because this is important, because part of the federal guidelines for the trans students was around the bathroom usage. And we know that anti-HB2, which was huge news, was a big deal in influencing targeting this legislation against us. It abandoned its rest. So HB2 had been challenged by the Department of Justice, and a lawsuit was filed, and now it's been abandoned. The Department of Justice and Obama sued North Carolina and said it's unconstitutional to restrict the rights of transgender people using a bathroom. Obama administration Sessions said, oh no, we're not going to defend it. We're pulling the lawsuit. Basically saying, that was unheard of. Administrations do that. They flip, but not that severely. So they left those lawsuits basically open. The Justice Department abandoned its historic lawsuit. So this is a big deal, and this is big because it has huge implications. So there's the backlash over North Carolina that we saw nationally. Everybody pulling out and saying, fix this, restore these protections. Otherwise, we're not having NCAA is not coming. You know, we're not going to hold these sports events. We're not going to hold these concerts, right? Everybody, we all knew about that. So did that work? Well, yes and no. HB 142, known as HB2, doubles down on HB2. So it was repealed, but then they watered it down, but it still left a discrimination against about 45,000 North Carolinians into law. They still can't use the bathroom of their gender identity. We've actually had several clients from North Carolina relocate. We call them refugees from North Carolina. Refugees from other American states, only in America. And they've actually like, we don't want to be there anymore. They're like just, and they had no place to live. They literally fled here, staying on people's couches, but they're here and they feel safer. So this is still standing. And that lawsuit alleged that HB2 violated the federal law. Not only did it violate Title IX, Title VII of the Civil Rights, 1967 Civil Rights Act, which prohibits discrimination in employment, and the Violence Against Women's Act, which prohibits discrimination DOJ-funded program. Remember, the government had challenged that. and now they abandoned that. HDB2O continues to be challenged in separate cases by Lambda Legal, American Civil Liberties. I love this quote here because she says here, Lily Carello, an incoming 24-year-old journalism graduate, says her therapist saw her therapist for the first time in months because she was getting so stressed out by the public debate around the law and which bathroom to use. You got to have a bathroom selfie these days if you're trans. Seriously. So I was in a layover in D.C. So I'm in the Charlotte, North Carolina. I had planned this thing for like 24 hours. Like, conference? What conference? I want my selfie in the bathroom in North Carolina. Come and arrest me. Come and arrest me. And that's a good picture, too. That was like the fifth one. I was like, no, that's a happy. No, close the toilets. Who plans a selfie in a bathroom? That's what we're doing now. You know, we're not like the safety threat that you think we are. We're actually trolling the perfect selfie so that we can post it on social media platforms and going, look, I'm in a bathroom. It was pretty silly. Look at that. Anyways, yes. So in 2017, 2018, your takeaway is a trans person taking a selfie in a public restroom is an act of revolution. How did we get here? Really? Okay. Look at that again. Okay. Primer on bathroom bills really quickly. This is a little bit, we call them the bathroom bills. 16 states as of 2017 modeled after how HB2, which at that time had been the only one that had passed. 16 states had all have these planned. Including Texas. I was actually in Texas last June when they were debating it. I was training the public health department. That was fun in session when the public health department, the epidemiologist, the prevention, and we were that came up as far as we were talking about pronouns and bathrooms and everything. And the point is, if you're doing all this, just public health point, if you are training your public health department staff to on gender identity and pronoun usage and who's identifying as who, and these are your clients, and you've got all this funding out in the community at your public health clinics, and you're all ready and you're training all your staff on what's the proper, and this is gender nonconforming, and this is what it means, this is what they means, and this is what, you know, how she or he identifies. You're right, you're trying to do everything right so we don't offend, and everybody's ready on pronoun and everything and ready to serve and take their proper sexual orientation and gender identity data, and you're waiting for them to come in. And all your trans folks are sitting at home because I can't go pee. And I have to take public transportation for 3 hours to get from point A to this clinic and then get back. And I can't pee because it's against the law. They ain't coming. You can do all the prep work. They're not coming to your clinic because they can't pee safely. So let's talk about urinary tract infections. Let's talk about other health issues because you're holding your pee all day or you're holding it for hours on public transportation. That's wider impact and public health impact of these bathroom bills. They're insidious. And that's where they're targeted. Their target is to keep us at home. If you can't navigate point A to point B, like I said earlier, safely, you're staying at point A, wherever point A it is. All right, let's look at justice. So we already have a lawsuit being abandoned. This was canceled. Transgender persons in custody, a legal landscape. That was long planned and canceled. Bureau of Prisons. A legal policy of almost entirely housing transgender people in federal prison facilities that match their sex assigned at birth. You're housed by genitalia, no matter how much transition related you have. Got a penis, you're sitting in the men's. Even if you have full breasts, hormones, everything. That's one of the big things that a lot of people are not aware of. And that influences federal policy down to state and local levels. So that's going to affect our policies, maybe not in the Bay Area, but in other states. June 4th, Department of Education withdrew its funding in Ohio School District discriminated against a transgender girl. The department gave no explanation for withdrawing. None. They just withdrew it. Court goes, okay. The reason why I'm reading from there is because I didn't bring my glasses because I'm really vain and I love this behind me, and so that's why I'm reading there. I can't see the screen. And it's more fun to walk around. Justice Department, July, a year ago, filed a legal brief on behalf of the U.S. and the U.S. Court of Appeals, Second Circuit, arguing that the 1964 civil rights, this got a lot of play, does not prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation or implicit in gender identity. Almost every other administration had said it did. They broke, and they're saying it doesn't. So many lawsuits are attacking this now. This is a big deal because this affects not only trans students, youth, women, teenagers, young girls. This is all being interpreted completely different from the Obama administration and even the Bush administration. Department of Housing, HUD. If you understand the economics of trans reality, low-income housing is almost the only thing is that a lot of young trans people and older trans people of color are basically accessing, whether it's SRO hotels, Section 8 housing. HUD had passed in 2016, I believe, or 2015, Obama administration had passed sweeping guidelines removing discrimination in LGBT in HUD housing. Game changer, especially for HIV positive, African American, Latina, low income trans people. They now can't be discriminated. Now they can. That's what they're moving for now. Removing all the guidance and the key resource documents and best practices for housing. So we know that they're moving to eliminate our housing. Legislation. Kansas is fun these days. Dorothy ain't in Kansas anymore, let me tell you. The entire platform says at every step of the way, trans people in the state of Kansas, including youth, children, will not be validated in their transgender identity in any medical setting, any school, in any environment at all. And this is called it was called the compassionate view. Compassionate because they think that they're being compassionate because there's no such thing as transgender identity, and we don't want people to be misguided in that. And so we're here to help them and say that they're not. The whole state. This was the Republican platform plank. So how many GOP states, red states, are going to follow that? I know. See? You're all like, really? Really? I know. This is what we do. Do you want to know what the trans mental health is? There we go. This is a little window. And then we have the famous tweets. I know. This was hard looking at these tweets on my computer that hard. But the famous, infamous ban trans male shaming, which has now had four court challenge and is still deemed unconstitutional and cannot be enacted. So I don't have time in this limited forum to tell you all the actions against these, but no, all these actions are because of this. Every action has reaction. So these are the trans military ban for really no reason. We now know the reason it was a bunch of conservative Republicans that had actually got mad because they went to Mattis and they wanted a ban and Mattis said no. So they went around Madison and went to the White House and they had a meeting with Trump. Vicky Hartzell, who is a Republican conservative congressman, I believe it's Oklahoma, was the leading charge of this. And she's virulently anti-trans, not anti-gay, anti-trans. Reaction to this, here you go. Fired by a tweet, imagine. Captain Jacob Elizer, 31, who serves in the Kentucky Army National Guard, took the day off from his job as a therapist in Lexington to figure out the situation. Fired by a tweet. That was honestly pretty shocking. Rudy Akberon is 26, said he would not leave the armed forces. I'm just serving as a soldier just like anybody else. His chain of command was supportive of him as he transitioned from female to male. Everybody's hurt. Everybody is scared. This is people's lives we're talking about, people who enlisted nearly 20 years ago and now 18 or 19 years in. Now that's being taken away and they don't get to retire. Four legal challenges and this is now still considered unconstitutional and not being administered yet. But they're going to keep fighting it. So imagine reading these tweets and you're like, your pension is tied up into that, your whole service career on a tweet. Employment. Yep. Sweeping discrimination. I'm over here because you guys are like all alone over here and I feel like I need to talk to you. Like, come over here on stage with me. You guys are holding it down over here. Employment. Implicitly gender identity. Businesses to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. It's okay. October 5th, Justice Department released a memo, just a memo, but it instructs the Department of Justice attorneys to take the legal position that federal law does not protect transgender workers from discrimination. He just really likes us. It's like, hey, where we can get that transgender word in there, right? October 6th, Justice Department released a sweeping license to discriminate, allowing federal agency government contractors, government grantees, even private businesses to engage in legal discrimination, as long as they can cite religious views. And healthcare again. This is all about the Affordable Care Act's non-discrimination protections for trans people. Prevents HHS from taking any action to force transgender people's rights from healthcare discrimination. So we can't complain. We can't file a lawsuit. May 2nd, announced a plan to roll back regulations determining non-discrimination professions. So they actually went after us first before the rest of y'all. We're at the front of the line. Y'all got to get behind us, okay? And then when they get done with us, it's coming after you guys. All right. And then the infamous CDC words. I'm a banned word. Janet's a banned word. Lorena's a bad word. Erica's a... Can't say transgender anymore. Actually, during the Bush years, when we were doing HIV and grants and stuff around 2010... No, before. About 28, if those who work in HIV. we started hearing a congressional investigator, several congressional Republicans, anti-gay, were literally pulling any grants that had the words gay, MSM, anal sex, transgender. They might have had 2 years left of their funding. They were NIH grants, they were CDC grants, they were HHS grants, and they were all pulled and notified of the final, you're not getting your final year funding. So that has happened before, but not publicized like this. So we've dealt with these waters before, but this was like transgender. We were like behind the game, man. We were behind MSM and anal sex. Like, how do we get in front of y'all? Like, what the? So, yeah.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
And then, so this is probably the biggest thing that we've seen since then, is this new religious conscious law. So not only is it a religious, it's going to be a new rule targeting trans people and reproductive act and abortion. They're going to create a whole department to enforce it. A whole department of enforcement. What's insidious about this is that actually a friend of mine is cited in the actual entire Department of Justice memo, which if you read it, it's like 50 pages. So one of my friends is a trans guy, Evan. And his whole case is literally listed in it. We sit on the LGBT caucus for the California Democratic Party. So last year, he checks into Dignity Health. He's providers Dignity Health. They're one of the largest providers in the state. He's having his hysterectomy. Checks in. Says, I'm trans. Please use him, he, his pronouns. Next morning, surgery's canceled. Hysterectomy's completely canceled. He's like, why? They informed him he was transgender and they weren't gonna couldn't cover it. Because of they're religiously based. Just canceled it. That is now cited as a reason for religious objections and for healthcare providers to be able to work and cite their religious preferences and their conscience that they don't have to. And he said, it's unreal to see my name in my case that I'm fighting with the ACLU here in San Francisco cited in this justification for them to do that. And he's still having it. I mean, he's just like, I can't even talk about it. So it's a real thing. And then this is probably one of the things that a lot of people, we hear all about the immigration, we hear it about the children, but our trans immigrants are being caught up in all of this too. And this is Roxanna. And I had met her some many years ago in LA at some conferences because she has been back and forth. She was part of the migrant caravan that Trump was really targeting and tweeting out and building his base about. There was a whole bunch of trans women in that caravan from El Salvador and Honduras and Nicaragua. They held her in ICE for 5 days, withheld her medications, and she died. And this has been notorious. And the only reason why we know that she died, an activist on the ground in Los Angeles and in Texas, was because they read some printout of deaths in custody. And they used all male pronouns and misgendered her and everything. And it was only because her friends knew she was in custody and recognized her name. They didn't even say it. They just, oh, male deceased in custody. Like a throwaway person. That's how they reported it. Yeah. So again, we're fighting on this front too. You can find a whole list. I just pulled out. So at the National Transgender Center of Education website, they literally have a breakdown of all these actions. And it only goes to May, and there's 28 targeting trans and LGBT. Only 28. Just 28. There's also another list down here of six that are affecting everybody and all the intersectionals of immigrant, DACA, also Department of Housing and Urban Development, Department of Health and Human Services, Affordable Care, more education, that are going to affect trans and LGBT people as part of everybody else being caught up in this. And this doesn't even talk about SCOTUS. So the Supreme Court, we know that Kavanaugh, the latest... What we're expecting is that they want to take some of these transgender cases that are unsettled, especially the transgender identity, student identity, the bathroom bills, take it to the Supreme Court, and then with a conservative majority, they will then enforce it in Supreme Court ruling and law that we will be second to class citizens and strip us of our civil rights. They want these to go to the court under Kavanaugh. That's why we're fighting all across. Not only is it about gay marriage rights and marriage equality, but it's about all of the other LGBT and transgender rights, and specifically targeting transgender rights at the Supreme Court level. That's why Kavanaugh is so dangerous to not only us, but everybody else. Okay, we're going to breathe a little bit. And now we're going to get down nitty gritty because the time is running and I'm mindful of our time. Everybody breathe after all that. Yeah. That's what it feels like a little bit of what trans people go through, reading these headlines. That's what our mental health is. Stressed out. Freaking out. Does it matter that we're in the Bay Area? Yes. Does it matter we're in California? Yes. We have the most trans and LGBT protections in any other state. But they could be threatened at any time federally. This is our program in TransVision. We're going to go to all the good things that we're doing. And this is the stuff I really like to talk about because the biggest thing that you see there is that picture is that trans flag. That is a trans flag that you can see coming across the parking lot. I don't know how many clinics can say that literally can see a transgender flag in their parking lot coming across the clinic. That flag is huge, and it's a beacon to our clients. So if they're running around if they don't see a trans flag, they know they're in the wrong place. We know. They just automatically, they see the flag, and they go, oh. I'm like, girl, where you been? Oh, I got lost. I went to the other clinic and everything, and I knew it wasn't there because the flag wasn't there. This flag, when we recently painted and the walls were down, we had a federal audit, and we painted everything. The first thing they said, we said, well, what do you guys want up in front? We're going to kind of redo the walls. We're not going to put everything up. They said, put the flag up. We'll help you. They literally volunteered and they wanted that flag up right off the bat. We did. We put the flag up. Nothing else went on the walls for 2 weeks while we got frames and stuff. But they had the flag there and they were excited. And it was their peace and their calm and their center. So we are excited to do that. So here's our program. This is how we handle the Trump era. It's nothing. It's worse than we've ever dealt with before. But we've navigated conservative waters before. We've been around since 2002. We're an award-winning service provider resource for trans people in Alameda County and not just Alameda County, other states. We're recognized nationally and internationally as a trans-affirming primary health care and HIV program for trans people. And we are the first comprehensive health and social services program for trans people in Alameda County. So I'm kind of proud that we were able to do that. That we move beyond HIV prevention and care services, which we should always be moving and trying to expand and evolving and not just staying. Trans services historically have always come through HIV dollars. Pretty much as gay men's health has always come through HIV dollars. And when you're trying to solve a myriad of issues through what we call HIV pennies now, you're not going to go far. So we've looked for alternative forms of funding to expand. Trans people are way more than HIV prevention and care, way more than HIV. Our goal is to lower the infection of Alameda County transgender women by increasing knowledge, but we address everything else under the sun that they're dealing with. They don't want to just be dealing with HIV. They want to deal with they're dealing with a whole other issues. One of our successes is that we have full trans staff, and I want to acknowledge my team over here in this room. They came here, and I want to, they do the work. They do the magic. I'm not doing any magic. But they are the magic that does. They have the relationship with the clients. They find the clients. They find the clients at 3 o'clock in the morning when they've missed their appointments. They know they have the pulse on the community. And so Janet, Lorena, Erica, this is my team. I don't want to out them in the room, but they're here. So I want to just really, they're up here in the front and they are amazing and they're why we are such a successful. So I might be the face, but they're the heart and the soul of the team and they're the ones that actually do the work. And then we have Charlie, who is the gentleman in the middle, and Charlie does our prep navigation, full prep access and prep. And that's what we've been working on a lot right now. And there's our safe affirming spaces. No matter what we do, no matter what we're dealing with, no matter what we're navigating, our clients always know that they have affirming in a safe space, whether it's in the exam room that reflects them or it's in the waiting room. And I think that's the biggest thing. When we created this program in 2002, the one thing that we said, what's the first thing that we want to do is a safe space. And there it is. What we do for our clients is we take control. We work with clients to control what they can. I can't control what Trump is doing. I can control what we can. What do you need? Do you need your ID to change? Do you need a doctor's appointment today? Do you need a surgery referral? Let's control what we can. And let's just focus on that. Let's not worry about what's happening over there. We help our clients learn how to advocate for themselves. We appeal all insurance denials and appeal, which usually helps, and we usually get it through. Educate on trans protections. What is protecting them now? They need to know, and most already do know. And then if we can't help them, we refer to resources that can. we don't do anything different than a lot of other clinics in San Francisco. I think it's just that we're in Fremont and we're not here. One of the things we do is the free name and gender change assistance we added several years ago, way before Trump and Affordable Care Act. We do over 100 name changes a year and we don't charge. It's part of established care. So that's a bit, and we go to court. Janet goes to court. Lorena does everything in Spanish and go to court. We go to court with them. So does Erica. Peer-to-peer client, surgery referrals, letters, and we do the informed consent model. And on our trans-specific health intake, we do preferred name, chosen pronouns. It's all there, along with legal documentation. So it's just really listening to our clients. Prevention services are all the same around the that everybody else is doing. So that's not really important. What's important is we just finished a federal research project. We are one of nine in the country, and it was named the Brandy Martell Project. So we've been dealing with the trans murders for a while. Brandy was one of our team members, and she was shot and killed in Oakland in 2012. So she's always on our walls and guiding us. So we've been dealing with the hate crime and the hate violence education for a long time. So we just finished a special project of national significance with Brandy. We were one of nine in the country. It's important to know that, again, what are we doing? We're creating innovative programs. We're creating access to care that doesn't just deal with HIV again. We modeled two specific interventions, one legal and one modeled like a college program of courses that a lot of the community didn't get because they didn't finish high school or weren't going to college. Our lawyer, we had federal money to hire an Oakland attorney who 25 successfully navigated them in Oakland court. Not one was incarcerated. Prior to having this money, I was going to court with the clients. I'm like, they're in my program, put them in my custody, and you're with Tiffany, and if you come back in the next 6 months to have any police interaction, we're reinstating the charges. I'm like, don't worry, they're not coming back. I'm good, but I'm not a lawyer. David got them all off of everything from DUIs to 5,000 of court fines, and I mean, just a ton of stuff. 0% incarceration. And then in our living room workshops, we had 20 graduates. And at the when we opened the sessions, we only had one person working. Seven were fully employed at the end because we got to do employment sessions. And actually, out of the 16 workshops, the most popular session was self-defense. We had a... we have a former law enforcement partner of ours. She is in San Jose, and she does domestic violence training with women who have been abused in domestic violence. And she works with the LGBT community and trans women specifically. So not only did she come up, but we went through 3 hours of hand-to-hand, literally disarming from guns and knives and running and self-defense and protective. And they kept coming. We've done 4 or 5 different sessions, and they keep coming back for more, and we keep bringing more. It's their most favorite session. So this was very successful. And then we do a lot of media and visibility advocacy. A lot of people don't, where are you going to get a trans person in Fremont? We know where to find him. Trans people in Fremont, there's cows in here. Oh, no, there's trans people up there. We work a lot with Amber Lee. So it's important to get the, not just the San Francisco voices. I love San Francisco. I have a lot of colleagues here, but a lot of trans people live outside of this area. And it's important to have those stories and voices. And I can represent, but I want my team up there telling their stories and representing their communities too. Janet is actually a former veteran. So she has done several interviews on trans veteran policy when that kicked off. And there we go. More education, more training. We're everywhere. But the biggest thing I think we do to counter the Trump administration and all of this anti-stuff is I think at the local level, we bring hope. We sell hope. We give hope. So I'm going to read this to you. We had a client. We're actually going to feature our program in our annual report. First time ever. Only took 18 years, but hey, we're there. And so I asked her, I said, hey, would you mind giving us a little bit, you know, why do you come to Tri-City Health Center? So she said, okay. And she sent me this long email and I cut it down. And this is what she said. This is just literally cutting it down. I'm a transgender woman. I've been going to Transvision for nearly 4 years now. I keep coming back to them because they've taken good care of myself and others. I've referred several people to them and recently joined the Transgender Advisory Board because in the time that I've been going there, I've gotten to learn just how important the services they offer are. Not just locally, but the rest of the Bay Area and also beyond. They don't just provide hormones. They do a lot more that often gets overlooked. The staff also does advocacy and outreach. They have done training sessions, taught classes, made appearances at Pride Celebration events. Support groups are expanding. Visitors from other areas and even other countries have come to learn their model in effort to bring trans healthcare back to their local communities. Transvision is helping change the world with their example. These are her words. I just said, tell us why you come here. Through the local transgender community may seem very small, and it is in Fremont in the East Bay as you get past Hayward down towards San Jose in that little area, the Tri-City area. It's bigger than it looks and is growing thanks to service available here. Not all the patients at the clinic are locals, though. Some from the surrounding cities, some from across the bay, some from further out in the state, and even a few people from out of state have found themselves in Transvision's waiting room. I'm very thankful that the clinic exists. They saved me. Transvision is a vital resource for the transgender community, and they are making an ongoing difference. That, I think, more than all this other stuff and all this life, that's what we do. I think we give hope. And we actually have concrete results and the tools to do that. Last but not least, I can't leave without a tribute, because even in San Francisco in 2018, with all the resources that we have here, we're losing our students. Dane was 22 years old. He took his life. And if you've ever been at CCF, you know the resources they have. I went to CCSF in 1986. Google it. It's like the 21st century. It was way back then. And I wasn't out. And I wasn't myself. And I was struggling. And I was going to be a cop. So I've actually gone to CCSF and spoken there. So this is personal, because I went there for 3 years after trying to be a cop when I was still way deep in the closet. And in 2018, Dane's family refused to reclaim his body after 10 days from the coroners. Apparently, they were estranged and they didn't accept his trans identity. So this went nationally, actually internationally, and they were raising money just to bury Dane with dignity. They actually did. They raised $25,000. And at the last update, Dane's mother and grandmother were helping with the funeral arrangements. But in 2018, in San Francisco, we have trans students whose parents refused to claim their body. So think about that. We have a lot of work to do, not just nationally, but even locally. So I want us to tribute to Dane. This is why we do the work we do. And remember, we are not a mental health disorder. We are vibrant people. And that's part of, in my intro, my bio, I talk about, first thing I say is I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a kids. My kids are in the back, my wife's in the back, because it's important to frame that narrative that we are sisters and sons and daughters and grandchildren. And it's important that we have families, and many of us have kids. And my wife and I have been in it for 32 years. So, you know, we didn't just hopped out of some trans bin the last 15 years and like, oh, here we are. I'm like, whoo, it's Halloween. So we are not a mental disorder. We never have been. And hopefully the world will start to see that as we have a lot of work to do. And we are at questions and answers. All right.
We have a couple of minutes.
We have a couple of minutes.
And if you have any questions for Ms. Woods afterwards, I'm going to be presumptuous and assume she'll be happy to stick around and answer them.
And my last magic trick is to kind of clear the room for him.
That's a joke between
us. It's a joke. Isn't it a total joke? I promise no magic tricks on stage.
Yep.
So any questions at this point that you want to have, please feel free.
I'll hand you the microphone.
Yeah, the microphone, yes. And I'm pretty transparent up here. And if I don't have the answer, we can help you find them. Any questions? Burning questions?
Well,
especially things that weren't clear.
Well, are you okay just hanging out outside?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then we're going to.
Hold on. You got some questions?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Man, trying to get
right
me off the stage.
You're the purloined
letters. They're never having me come back again. No, I'm taking this with me.
Thanks for the presentation. I just wondered, what in the next 6 months or a year, what would you say is your, of all the different policy concerns you listed, what you say is the biggest one?
That's a good one. I would say the Healthcare Affordable Care Act, because it's the gateway to so many things. It's so for health of our communities. It's mental health. It's physical health. If that is completely gutted and we lose all of those Affordable Care Act protections, and so just a primer, and those that work in this field know, and there's a lot of people in this room that I know, you know this. But prior to 2014 and the Affordable Care Act passing, transgender identity was considered a pre-existing condition. that word, transgender, just like HIV, just like cancer. So if you're an African-American or Latina or Asian trans woman, a trans woman of color who is HIV positive, and you have those diagnoses in your charts, you are a pre-existing condition again. There is no insurance company that touches you. We have to pay for all that care out of ADAP and other funds. And so I think the Affordable Care Act is the one that, when you have all of your healthcare covered, your specific healthcare, we're called specialty care now. I think if we protect and keep fighting, because it's not just us that's losing, it's everything. We're the center of that as far as, we're one of the main things they're targeting to remove. We're already seeing the insurance companies here in California already tighten up with the restrictions. We just got new guidelines on letters of refusal. We have to have all this more documentation. We now have to have a prior authorization for oral estradiol, not just injectables, regular estrogen pills that you might take or you might take. We now have to have a prior authorization and documentation of, and they want to see our labs. So I think that's going to, because once you have your surgery and everything else comes together, you can access other services. So I think that's the biggest thing that we're all working on right now. Okay. Any other questions? In the back?
It's being recorded, so we'll hear your voice.
Yes. I was just wondering if you have any plans to expand your services for younger children who have come out.
So this wasn't covered in the slides, but yes. So we have about 20 that are about 24 to 14 that we see for primary care. My youngest client, our youngest client, is 14 years old, about ready to start puberty blockers. We've had several other puberty blockers. So we've been working with school districts in Fremont, which is not easy. She was in the other day. She's just a joy. She hangs out with us. We do full primary care for trans youth and trans students. So, I mean, we follow all the guidelines. If you are under 18, we have to have parental guardian consent. We make sure all that is documentation. They have to literally come in and meet with us. They have to meet with the provider. We have to have, but once that's done, we can do puberty blockers in the guidelines until 16. Recommended guidelines for starting hormone therapy is 16. We get them to 16, and then we go straight on to hormones, and everything is monitored under full medical care. And most of our trans students at youth have already seen professional counselors and therapists and have those letters and documentation. So it's changing their life. I mean, and I think the bigger thing is that we give them a safe space. Even if they're not old enough to start, like medical transition, we allow them to come out and hang out with the team. We talk with the parents, the family. We make time for them and that they can be around us and be around. I think modeling, you know, these are trans people who have made it through these difficult years and here they are. And I get to hang out with them. And, you know, I was telling our client the other day, tell her stories about me being in Hollywood back in 2000. And we were cracking up and she was laughing. And for a while, she doesn't have to be a kid navigating no school. And I think that's a big deal for us. So, yeah. And we can talk later about other services that we offer. Here, wrap it up. Okay. I think we're going to be out of time.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. That was absolutely wonderful. Thank you, Ms. Woods. And you said you don't mind hanging out in the foyer for a little bit.
Absolutely.
And so this concludes this Commonwealth Club presentation. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you. Thank you.